Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Hello, I'm Steph. Welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Today I'm joined by the whole gang. You know who they are: Heather, Pat, Nicola, Teresa and Linda.
Hi.
Well, wherever you are in the world, I don't suppose it's passed you by that Christmas is just around the corner. Here in the Write Club, the podcast studio, we've been tucking into mince pies and thinking about presents. Yeah. So later in the show, Linda's going to offer us some gift ideas for the readers in our lives. We will be sharing what some of you told us on the Facebook group that you're hoping Santa will bring you this year. There's a judicious use of the Oxford comma there, Pat. I hope you noted that.
She's thinking judicious.
Yes. No, I'm thinking mulled wine.
Okay, the end of the show, Heather and friend of the podcast, Julian Cohen, are going to share what's on their bedside tables. Teresa has a seasonal word of the week to share, and Nicola's going to be reading from her work in progress. But before all that, we'll stick with tradition and ask Pat to ask us to...
name the novel.
I was trying to find something appropriately seasonal, but I failed. So this is completely
random. So it's not about Christmas.
No.
That's a good clue.
Not about Christmas. No, okay. This was published in 1968 and set in the 1960s. The novel describes a day in the life of the protagonist. The story begins with him in bed and ends in the same place, but everything has changed in the course of this day. Yeah. It's a continuous narrative without chapters, entirely from the protagonist's viewpoint.
A day in the life.
Tum-ti-tum-ti-tum. Sound of heavy thinking.
I know what it is, but I can't remember.
Okay, clue number two. The book was made into a film in 1969, though the title, which was a reference to the legalities of ownership in medieval England, was shortened to one word.
Crikey. That's cryptic.
It's good, that, isn't it? I didn't think it was.
The legalities of ownership.
One word. Okay.
Third and final clue. Harshly unsentimental, this novel tells the story of the remarkable relationship between the friendless boy living in a soulless northern town and the equally destructive, fierce kestrel which he raises from the nest.
I can't remember where I got it.
The final clue was a giveaway.
What?
Kes.
Okay, the title of the book is A Kestrel for a Knave by Barry Hines. The film is Kes. It was shortened to Kes. And the book is named from a poem found in the Book of Alban's Saint, which is a book printed in 1486 that's a compilation of matters relating to the interests of the time of a gentleman. It's also known by titles that are more accurate, such as The Book of Hawking, Hunting and Blazing of Arms, whatever that means.
Wow.
But in medieval England, the only bird a knave was legally allowed to keep was a kestrel.
And that's
where the title came from.
Wow.
And the book became a sort of permanent fixture almost on English GCSE syllabuses or syllabi. I'm not sure it still is.
I'm not sure if it is syllabi. I think it is syllabuses in English.
In English, yes, but archaic.
It's not Latin, is it? Syllabus.
Well, it was.
In that case, it would be syllabi.
I got you to the end.
You did. Yeah. Well, I got Kes. I didn't get the title of the book.
I didn't get the title of the book.
But I got the film Kes.
I'd forgotten. Good. I mean, I've read it several times, but I'd forgotten that it was the course of one day.
That's
interesting.
And it's lying in bed all day.
No, he gets up and goes to school.
It's a very good
book. I haven't read it, but it's very well thought of.
I think I will read it.
Have you not read it?
No.
I read it at school.
Yes, I read it. There's some fabulous sections in it. It is a good book.
We did Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah. Kes is much better.
At the Hollies.
Oh, did you go to the Hollies?
Yes, I did.
I don't know what the Hollies are.
It was a school in Manchester. School. Who's in charge of this episode? Can I bring the chairman's attention?
Sorry.
We are digressing.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay.
Right, now, Nicola, we're going to hear a scene from the Taurus trilogy with Brienne and Rex, aren't we?
We are indeed, yes. I've had a bit of a breakthrough. I was thinking about how Brienne was going to move through space and time, and I watched a programme on maths, and then Steph's voice, haunting me, said something about smells, and I thought how evocative smells are. So here we go. She's found out how it's all going to happen. Brienne gazed out to sea, thinking hard about everything Rex had just told her. So much of the plan Rex had outlined seemed beyond her comprehension. Far-fetched at best, downright suicidal at worst, the irony was not lost on her. So assuming I'm going to go along with this mad scheme to get these 12 keys back, how do you make it work? How do I actually travel through time and space? How do you get me there? And more to the point, how do you get me back safely? Oh, we don't do anything. You'll do all the heavy lifting. But I can give you some pointers for the start and end points, Rex said, getting up. Close your eyes now and empty your mind of questions and breathe in deeply for a few minutes. What can you smell? She shot him a puzzled look, but did as he asked. Rex walked over to the corner of the balcony and opened a concealed cupboard. The wooden door dropped down to make a waist-high shelf. He produced a shallow jade-green porcelain bowl traced all over with fine gold lines. He put the bowl on the shelf and stood for a moment, contemplating the many little glass bottles inside. Choosing three, he shook out some of the contents from each. Sea, of course. That'll be ozone, I suppose. Brienne breathed in through her nose, then tried sniffing before going back to deep breathing again. Some kind of herb. Is it rosemary? And there's another smell. I can't quite identify it. Sunshine on the stones, perhaps? That's more of a feeling than a smell. I can definitely smell and still taste the bread, tomatoes and olive oil we had for lunch. Very good. The more unique you can make the composite smell, the more accurate you will be. It usually takes at least three elements, so you have plenty there. Rex stood by the cupboard holding the bowl and warming it in his hands. So do you think you've memorised that smell of here now? Don't open your eyes yet. Unfortunately, your sense of smell gets acclimated within a few minutes. You stop smelling the new smells, so keep breathing in for as long as you can still smell them. Brienne sat breathing in and out, enjoying the sunshine on her face. It was nice to be doing something, and yet at the same time doing nothing. She rubbed her hands across the stones either side of where she sat. The act of breathing the fragrant air laden with scents was making her other senses come alive. Yes, I've got it. And as I said the names of the elements to myself, I'd definitely be able to remember the actual smell in my head. Sea, rosemary, plus bread, tomato and olive oil, all mixed together. Excellent. So now all you need to do to visit a place is to be holding the nautilus shell. Then close your eyes, empty your mind, and conjure up the unique smell of where you're going. I'll help you in the early days. Brienne opened her eyes and gave Rex a long, hard stare. So are you confident that the smell of here has embedded itself into your head now? She nodded. Let's try it out then, will we? Like an easy first test run. Close your eyes again and take a deep breath. Rex carried the bowl over to her and held it under her nose. Brienne felt a sickening lurch as if the whole balcony slipped sideways, and the feel of the warm stones disappeared from underneath her.
Wow.
I've realised I've got a monstrous point of view issue in the middle there, haven't I? Wow.
Just about every other paragraph.
Oh, but the thing is,
you can sort that out. Yeah. That's easy.
Exactly. You're getting this stuff. You're writing, as you said, you wrote 3,000 words a year ago. And there are other things that are a little bit unclear to the reader, but you're getting it down, and you can go and you can
sort all that out. Yeah.
Point
yeah.
out the things that are a little bit unclear. But it's a great dramatic ending. The use of the smell, as you say, it's a breakthrough. It's brilliant. It's original. You know, and it works.
And I'll bet you anything that what happened when he brought the bowl over and it's full of smells of some place or time else. And the lurching is when she moves into that
absolutely.
Place.
Yes. Oh, right.
We got that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful. So she's off.
So, well, she's got the smell of home as well to come back to. So
right. She has to conjure up the smell of home.
Yeah, she does.
So
yeah.
She has to
and
find
there's a lot of jeopardy can now be happening in
yeah,
there.
Because she's going to, in the middle of a battle, she might have to stand there and close her eyes and meditate and conjure up
absolutely.
The smell. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it as a concept that the smells are going to transport her. And I think, as you say, it is a breakthrough because how often have you walked somewhere and smelt something and it just takes you straight back to the place? Yeah, aftershave of perfume or the smell of a particular food or...
Oh.
Yeah.
But then what if she smells something and that's not a place she wants to go?
Well, it's a three-pronged thing. She's got to be holding one of the keys, and the Nautilus shell that she wakes up with in her hand is one of the keys. She's got to be able to centre herself. And the energy is because each human is a Taurus and we can conjure up our own energy.
Oh, right.
And I was trying to think what could be strong enough to make someone summon up an inner force and get it going. And I thought smells might do it.
Absolutely. Mm. It's like I was telling you in an earlier episode about the smell of that wooden floor in the school room when I was a kid. It takes me right back there if I smell it,
I got a little bit confused about how does she know the smell of where she's going?
Because he's got it all in the bowl that he holds underneath her nose. I didn't make that clear, obviously.
Right.
Oh, at the end.
He's made a recipe that is exactly unique to where she's going.
Okay, so he's holding the bowl.
Right.
But what she's smelling is ambient.
Yeah, but he's getting her to embed the smell of where she is.
Yes,
so she can go back.
I understand.
He then mixes from the bottles.
Yeah,
I see.
The smell of where he's sending her.
Yes, exactly.
I just made the comments about... You know, sort of how does she know what the smells are of somewhere if she's not been before?
Yeah. Okay.
And then
that's why he's going to help. He's going to be helping her.
Right.
The mechanics of it.
I
got that.
When he's doing the thing with the concealed cupboard and the jade bowl, I thought he was mixing the hair smell.
I did too. Has she sniffed the bowl then? Because she's saying she can smell the scent.
Yeah, because I thought the timing off of that didn't work.
So that's what I mean about it, just a little bit of clarity.
Yeah, a little bit, obviously, you say let's try it out then, like an easy first test run, and then and then he shoves it under her nose. So I'll work on that. But I did, as I was reading it, that point of view thing just leapt out at me.
Yeah, I mean, I've marked them all on my copy here to give you, but I think it would work very well if you could do the whole piece in the Rex point of view.
Okay.
And then move to her at the end, jump onto her shoulder, and then because you'll need to transition to go wherever she's going now, won't you?
Yeah.
So the scene, it's up to you, but that would be my.
And I was confused whether the Nautilus was the same as the Nautilus shell and the bowl were the same thing, but they're not.
I mentioned that. But then I said, I think probably that's covered somewhere else.
Exactly.
I keep mentioning the shell she feels compelled to carry around.
Right, right. This is something that we're seeing things in little bits that we don't always remember.
But as you say, a breakthrough.
It is. Some little punctuation things, but nothing to worry about.
I like, as well, the characters are taking shape.
And you know, I'd lost Brienne in my head for a while. I wasn't interested in her for a while, but now I'm back and interested in her again.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You have a nice way, I think, with easy conversations. It's so natural, the back and forth between Rex and Brienne. I like that a lot.
Yeah, nice dialogue.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Right, Teresa, you've promised us a seasonal word of the week.
Well, I'm going to start off with a riddle. I lived my life between the worlds. Neither earth nor sky would call me child. The birds were my companions, the wind and rain my mentors. Daily I grew in power and strength, till snatched out of time by the trickster. Yeah, it's not clear, is it? But the word that I'm talking about, or the thing that I'm talking about today, is mistletoe.
Parasitic plant.
Yes, right. So between the earth and the sky, apparently without roots, the birds, the wind and the rain, and so on. Snatched out of time by the trickster, I'll come to later. So the word itself is the Old English mistletan. The tan bit supposedly means twig, and is similar to old Danish, Norwegian, Anglo-Saxon words, Norse and so on. And according to one source, the missile part is so called because it's propagated through the droppings of the mistle thrush. So mistle twig. I've got some folklore stuff here I got from thewhitegoddess.co.uk and theholidayspot.com, indebted to for a lot of this folklore stuff. So kissing under the mistletoe is associated with the Greek festival of Kronos, which in Roman times became Saturnalia, and later with primitive marriage rites, possibly originating in two beliefs. One, that the mistletoe has power to bestow fertility. We'll come to that again when we talk about the Druids. And the other, that the dung from which the mistletoe grew also possessed life-giving power. Mistletoe was sacred to the ancient Druids. The winter solstice, called Alban Arthan, was, according to Bardic tradition, the time when the chief Druid would cut the sacred mistletoe from the oak. So mistletoe grows on various trees, but the one that grows on the oak was considered sacred. It's cut using a golden sickle on the sixth night of the new moon after the winter solstice. Make a note of that. getting pretty close to Christmas there, I would say, or maybe past Christmas. The chief druid would then divide the branches into many sprigs and distribute them to the people, who hung them over doorways as protection against thunder, lightning and other evils. And it's thought that the druids believed that the mistletoe represented the sperm of the gods. So, when pressed, a semen-like substance issues from the white berries.
Oh, yes.
It does.
You've squeezed a few, haven't you?
Well,
you sounded very authoritative there. Mistletoe was considered a magical aphrodisiac. Girls standing under a sprig of mistletoe may have been asking for a bit more than a kiss. So, the Norse god Balder was the best loved of all the gods. His mother was Frigga, goddess of love and beauty. She loved her son so much that she wanted to make sure no harm would come to him. So she went through the world securing promises from everything that sprang from the four elements that they would not harm her beloved Balder. But Loki, a sly evil spirit, made an arrow from mistletoe wood, and he took the arrow to Holder, Balder's blind brother, and he guided Holder's hand, directed the arrow at Balder's heart, and he fell dead. So this is the trickster part of the riddle, the Loki, the trickster god. And Frigga's tears became the mistletoe's white berries. In ancient times, in some cultures, the mistletoe was seen as a plant of peace. If enemies met by chance beneath it in a forest, they laid down their arms and maintained a truce until the next day. And this is possibly another origin of the ancient custom of hanging a ball of mistletoe from the ceiling and exchanging kisses under it as a sign of friendship and goodwill. So you can choose your legend to suit yourself. According to the Anglo-Saxons, kissing under the mistletoe was connected to the legend of Freya, equivalent of the Norse Frigga. According to legend, a man had to kiss any young girl who, without realising it, found herself accidentally under a sprig of mistletoe hanging from the ceiling. Good excuse, if you ask me. Yes.
Consensual.
Exactly. Me too. If a couple in love exchange a kiss under the mistletoe, it is interpreted as a promise to marry, as well as a prediction of happiness and long life. That's only if they're in love. So you get away with it if you're just kissing a stray girl. It's often associated with thunder and regarded as a protection against fire and lightning. It is interesting to note the mistletoe was excluded from church decorations, probably due to its connection with the Druids and its pagan and magical associations. And this ancient ban on mistletoe is still widely observed even today.
Wow.
A lot to learn about mistletoe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't remember. Is mistletoe a feature in American?
Yes, it is. Oh, yes. Do you remember that wonderful old Brenda Lee song, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa?
Yes, of course. Yeah, underneath
the mistletoe last night.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Teresa. Now, I've been peeping at people's letters to Santa and their online wish lists, and I've noticed there are lots of people out there wanting lots of books. In fact, Moira Neary was on our Facebook group some weeks ago telling us about the books she's hoping Santa will bring her. And one of them was called Jacob's Room is Full of Books by Susan Hill. And I just thought that was such a fascinating title. I had to go and check it out. And it's actually Susan Hill, the writer, but she's written a book about a year of reading. All the books that she's read in a year, the books that she's taken off the shelf, put back on the shelf, reread, and so on. And I'll read you a little bit from the Goodreads review. It says, considering everything from Edith Wharton's novels through to Alan Bennett's diaries, Virginia Woolf, and the writings of 12th century monk Aelred of Rivolo. Okay, a 12th century monk. Susan Hill charts a year of her life through the books she has read, reread, or returned to the shelf. From beneath a shady tree in a hot French summer or the warmth of a kitchen during an English winter, Hill reflects on what her reading throws up, from writers and writing to politics and religion, as well as the joy of dandies or the pleasure of watching a line of geese cross a meadow. Full of wry observations and warm humour, as well as strong opinions freely aired, this is a rare and wonderful insight into the rich world of reading from one of the nation's most accomplished authors. My Sundoku just got...
I hope somebody buys that for Moira for Christmas.
I hope somebody buys it for me too.
She wrote The Woman in Black, didn't she, Susan Hill?
She did, yeah.
And with my crime reader hat on, she's written a series of sort of crime detective novels. And I've been waiting for ages for
The Small Hand, The Travelling Bag and The Printer's Devil Court are ghost stories that she's written. And The Woman in Black and Strange Meeting. Howard's End is on the landing.
Because she didn't know Howard's End is on the landing.
Howard's End. No, she wrote Howard's End is on the landing. Yeah, she's written.
Well, Jacob's Room is the title of a book, and so she's taken.
Yeah, Jacob's Room is full of books.
Well, I did, for those of you who can't see, I had a very quizzical look on my face.
Now, Linda, you went onto Facebook and told everybody you wanted a book called The Almost Sisters by Jocelyn Jackson.
Yes. When I read about the book, it's set in the South, and I love books about South and Southern writers. And it just sounds so intriguing because a secret is discovered in the attic, which changes everybody's lives. And there are always lots of secrets in the attic. If you go to the South of the United States and look in the attic, secrets will spill out everywhere. Right. So that's intriguing, and I really want to read it.
Life must be boring if you live in a house without an attic.
Yeah. And again, Goodreads says, with empathy, grace, humour and piercing insight, the author of Gods in Alabama pens a powerful, emotionally resonant novel of the South that confronts the truth about privileged family and the distinctions between perception and reality.
Yeah.
So that's the Almost Sisters. So let's hope Linda's husband, or perhaps, I mean, we know now that none of our family or friends listen to this podcast.
Right.
But let's hope somebody out there is listening. And if anybody is, could you let Hal or any of Linda's children know she'd like The Almost Sisters Jocelyn Jackson? Now, for me, I'm probably going to have to ask Santa for a new bookcase. My books are now spilling out everywhere, and so maybe two more bookcases.
Or maybe an extension.
Yes, an extension, or a library, whatever. It isn't just books that make great gifts for readers, is it, Linda?
No,
you've been doing some work
on
this.
It's not. I've gone online. I love to look at possible gifts, mostly for myself, but this time I wanted to bring to you some of the ideas that I saw that are really good choices for readers, book lovers. And books are always the obvious choice. But if you don't know what someone else has read or has not read, if they don't supply you with a list, then they might not like the choice you make for them. Then you can go with a gift certificate. But what's missing there is the excitement of opening up a nicely wrapped package and the joy of finding something there that you didn't know you were getting. So here are some suggestions. One of my favorite things are book plates. Don't you just love those? You stick in the front of your book and you put your name and everything on it. And I just think they're so neat. There are a lot of book plates on many of the sites. But if you want something nicer, something a little fancier, go to Neiman Marcus. They have personalized embossers that make a raised imprint like the kind you use by notary publics or maybe in the libraries that say, Library of your name.
I did something similar, which for my sister for one of her birthdays, which was have a stamp made, which says Ex Libris, Lizzie Palmer, whatever. And then a couple of, I think maybe last Christmas, my mum suddenly thought, what am I going to get all these great-grandchildren for Christmas? And she had several of these book plates made. So you get an ink pad and a plate and they can stamp their books. So that just reminded me of that.
That's a very good.
That's a lovely idea for a reader.
You know what? I may very well do that for some of my grandchildren. That's good, because they all are heavy readers. So for a reader who doesn't have a room of their own, like Virginia Woolf always says, a good pair of noise-canceling headphones, Bluetooth headphones, they can be found on Amazon and probably many other places, but that's a good book for someone who doesn't wish to be disturbed, but maybe you have a household of children or perhaps servants.
They're so bloody noisy.
I'm still struggling to imagine a Virginia Woolf in a pair of headphones.
Oh dear, she didn't have them on when she walked into the water, did she?
Maybe she did. People were shouting, "Stop!" She had voice cancelling headphones.
There's a site called uncommongoods.com. They have a lot of good gifts for readers, and in particular, I like, there's a reader's journal with beautiful illustrations of well-loved characters. Opposite a page with blanks for the book title, the author, plot points, favorite quotes, dates started and finished, and books to be read by the same author.
Oh, isn't that neat? Nice.
Notebooks are different little notebooks for purposes are always one of my fun things to have. There's a pair of band book socks, and they have a scarf with the same, and there are also some rude socks that tell people who disturb you while you're reading what they should do.
So, does it say, go away, I'm reading?
No, it says something else. The intent is go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, there's a 100-book scratch-off poster where once you read the book, you can scratch off the title and a little surprise
is underneath. Nice.
Yeah. That sounds lovely.
Isn't that nice? And there's one for kids, too, which would be a really good way.
Yeah. Hang on, I'm writing that down.
Yeah, great. And those are from uncommongoods.com. All of these sites will be posted on the Facebook group.
So they all deliver to all over the world?
Yes, of course, yeah. And T-shirts are always good, you know. At a place called Julie's Soul, and it's JULEHSOUL.com, have several really good ones. My favorite are A Day Without Reading is Like, just kidding, I have no idea.
That's great.
Another one that says Books, Helping Introverts Avoid Conversation Since 1454.
Oh, that's one for me.
How about a cup of tea while you're reading? At readitforward.com, you can find fun flavors in tins shaped like books. War and Peach, Alice in Wonderland, Much Ado About Nothing, and Oliver Lemon Twist, etc. There are whole sets of these. They're wonderful. If you're looking for jewelry, a really good place would be ebookfriendly.com. Necklaces, bracelets, keychains, all of them cute or with little books or sayings. And if you want a mug to put that wonderful War and Peach tea into, there's a great selection on Etsy.com, or even better, at Etsy.com, you can give a personalized mug with a dictionary definition of the giftee. For example, for Steph, we might say, Rouse, Stephanie, writer, reader, daydream believer, podcaster, great pal, cook, hostess. Isn't that wonderful?
That's lovely. Yeah, that would be a great gift.
Thank you.
I look forward to that.
But it won't be a surprise.
It will be a surprise. I'm not buying for it. But for those who, like me, use e-readers a lot, you miss the smell of the book, and you can get candles that have the scent of antique books.
Oh, wonderful.
That's wonderful.
They have a lot of literary candles with different titles like Jane Austen or...
I want one, Musty, Dusty, and Fusty.
That sounds good. So you can get an old library smell candle, too.
This is brilliant.
Isn't that wonderful? And at Caseable, there's a magnificent selection of cases for your e-readers, tablets, or your phone. All these things are so much fun.
If you like making things, you could make somebody a case for them.
Well, just imagine, listen to this. For the budget-minded.
Oh, sorry.
You can go to BuzzFeed.com for 27 incredibly clever do-it-yourself ideas for book lovers.
Ah.
Mm. And at myhomelibrary.org, you can download any of their amazing book plate designs and print them for free.
Wow.
Isn't that a great thing?
Wow.
The Literary Gift Company.com. I love that. The Literary Gift Company.com has lots and lots of literary puzzles, cards, games, magnetic poetry kits, and literary temporary tattoos.
Then oh, you come
get,
on in.
No, you can get, you know, like quotes from authors or whatever.
Fabulous.
Yeah, well, wonderful.
I just think actually what we should do, the six of us, one day as a sort of bonding exercise, let's just go and get a tattoo. A real one.
Oh, I heard they hurt. They hurt.
No, they don't hurt more than going to the dentist, but.
No, let's get temporary tattoos just for a trial run.
Okay.
They also have t-shirts and mugs, even wallpaper. I love this idea. If you don't have room for bookshelves, but you like the feeling of being surrounded by books, head on over to theliterarygiftcompany.com and buy some wallpaper that looks like bookshelves full of books.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome.
My niece has got it.
Oh, right.
Victoria Grant. Talk about you.
There's lots of pubs.
If Victoria's in our Facebook group, could you please send a picture of her literary wallpaper? Because I would see it.
Yeah. Well, that site, I think, has the variety of gifts for book lovers, probably the largest of variety of the many that I visited this week, and I highly recommend it. So theliterarygiftcompany.com.
We've still got time to get things delivered before Christmas.
Well, we have. I'm so behind, and I have been writing down ideas.
Yeah.
I've been feeling very uninspired.
You've only got 2 weeks.
That's right, you do.
2 weeks, and it'll all be over.
Well, I want also, I think there's a peach-colored, cozy, really cozy-looking sweatshirt that's got Maya Angelou's "And Still I Rise" quote on it. And I want one of those.
Well, that'd be lovely to snuggle down into the read, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You can always go onto your favorite browser and look for gifts for book lovers or gifts for readers and find many more.
I think that's really inspiring, actually. That's a very imaginative thing.
Yeah, they are.
And I hope on the Facebook group, if anybody's found an absolute whizzy
a brilliant
gift,
idea,
please post them there.
Yeah. Absolutely, because we'll still have
make sure it's cheap, because I don't spend that much on this.
No, let's say for the budget conscious.
That's excellent. Thank you. So, what readerly gifts are you hoping for, Nicola?
I would like any sci-fi books that you know, by any of my favourite authors.
Mm-hmm.
That would be just amazing. I want to read more sci-fi in the next.
Heather, what readerly gifts are you after?
I don't want a readerly gift. I don't want a book, because I've got so many books I've got to read. It's going to take me the whole
next
year.
What about a new armchair to read them from?
The bed's quite comfy. Oh, right. Okay. I've got a huge pile of things that I want to try and get through.
Well, I'm greedy, Heather. I'm sorry. You can never have too many books. And I do love Persephone books. And these were mentioned in an earlier podcast when one of our guests chose a Persephone book for their bedside table. It just reminded me of these beautiful books. And they are reintroducing forgotten authors, many of them women. And they make beautiful books with the end plates are all designed possibly from fabrics or wallpapers of the period. And they're lovely books. And you can go to Persephone books and buy somebody a subscription, a book a month for six months or for 12 months.
Wonderful.
And I would love it if somebody did that for me.
Yeah.
Maybe next year when I have a big birthday, somebody, my brothers and sisters might get together and do that. Mm. But, you know, I think that would be a lovely gift to get a book a month.
Mm. How about you?
A bookcase. I need a bookcase. But, yes, there are also some books. Quite a few of my sort of favourite authors haven't sort of released for a while, and they're just now coming out. Kate Atkinson,
the Christmas.
Transformations? I can't remember what it's called. I made a note of it the other day.
Is it Translations?
Could be.
I saw something, but yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
Could be. Sarah Paretsky, Ian Rankin.
Quite so you've got no problem getting all the books you want, as long as you have a bookcase to put them in.
Mm.
Anything else apart from the sweatshirt, Linda?
Oh, I want a bunch of stuff, yeah. I want some of the mugs. I love those T-shirts. And I want really fancy book plates. I'd like very much to have the scratch-off poster. I want...
I want the whole world.
Have those candles. I like the sound of the candles.
Yeah, the candles sound great.
Yeah. I really fancy the candles, yeah.
Of course, what I tend to do is I tend to, because of the thing that my kids don't know anything about sci-fi at all, I create an Amazon wish list. And in fact, we share Amazon wish lists in our family because you still get the element of a surprise.
Yes.
But you actually get books you actually want. Some gifts, and you can actually add any gift from any website to your Amazon wish list.
They can go through to it. Yeah, I'm thinking I might go for a new reading lamp.
Because
although when you're reading on Kindle, you know, you've got the backlight, if you've got the backlit Kindle, yeah. But if you haven't, or if you're reading from a book, certainly in these winter months when it's much darker and gets dark even indoors sometimes, I think it's not quite nice to snuggle up in your Maya Angelou sweatshirt.
Yes.
With your rude socks that say, "Go away, I'm reading." A mug of tea in your wonderful Stephanie Rouse mug,
right.
And snuggle up with a book under a nice reading lamp.
Yeah.
So that's a good reading gift as well.
At home, Mike was having trouble with his eyes and was struggling to read at night, and we invested in, and they're called Serious Readers. They're always advertising, and they're quite expensive, but they do sort of floor standing ones, but they do sort of table lamps as well, and they're brilliant. They're really.
So you can direct them onto.
You direct them, and it's a really good, strong light.
Lovely.
Serious readers.
Ah, lovely. Yeah,
little plug for them there.
Well, excellent. We'll put that on the Facebook group as well. Wow, goodness, that's another week almost over. But before we go, there's just time for Heather to tell us what she's reading at the moment. Heather, what's on your bedside table?
The Battle Mage by Peter Flannery. I was supposed to read this before we interviewed him weeks ago, but I read the wrong book first, as did my co-interviewer. So we were both a bit hopeless with that. But it's an epic tale of Falco and Malachi, and it's all about magic and dragons and battles and demons. So really pure fantasy, and I can't wait to get back to it.
Mm, great.
It won't keep you much longer.
And one of the his book art was fantastic, but he's got a quote on the front, which is, "There is nothing quite like a dragon's grief except for a dragon's rage."
Oh!
Ooh, I thought, that would make you want to read the book, wouldn't it?
That's good. I feel sorry for the dragon.
Let's hear from Julian Cohen about what's on his bedside table at the moment.
John Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath, which I've always wanted to read. And I started reading, because of the various things going on at Christmas, I stopped and I read about 20 pages. And it moved me so much. The first 20 pages, I felt almost a physical pain. The language in the description of the dust plains and the poverty and the people and their desperation is so powerful. It was almost too overwhelming to read. It felt physically painful reading it, which is quite something.
Oh, that's fabulous.
I love that book. I did consider doing it as a name the novel, but have to wait a while.
You'll have to wait until
somebody's. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thanks, Julian and Heather. Well, we're sorry to have to leave you for another week, but there are mince pies to be eaten and presents to be bought, not to mention writing done. Mainly shopping lists in my case. Don't forget to tell other aspiring writers about Write Club, the podcast. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd love to meet you on our Facebook group. Just search for Write Club, the podcast. If you like what we're doing, please leave us a 5-star review too. Happy writing and goodbye.
Goodbye.